So the biggest thing that we talk about each time for this calendar year has been the budget planning and review teams, because that's the biggest impact facing our campus in the coming year.
That really is the biggest body of work that's taking place right now on the campus, in addition to a number of other things that are going on with regard to accreditation of the university and, you know, quite a bit of progress we've made on a school outreach program. But yes, that is the 800-pound gorilla in the room for this year.
And what is the latest update? Have you scheduled meetings for the campus community to see what the planning and review teams have been discussing?
We just actually, this past week or so, sent out a calendar to chairs of our dozen budget review teams that have been meeting on campus all of this year. And the purpose of that memo was to indicate to them kind of the final schedule of events leading up to their reporting out of recommendation. So we've asked them at the end of February, I think the date is about the 25th, to actually have their recommendations reported out as a budget review team. What we'll be doing then in a very quick turnaround period, really of less than 2 weeks, is getting those final recommendations from the 12 teams, and then having a process where using a number of standing groups at the university, we'll vet those out and review those. But we'll have some internal review of the recommendations that come forward. And it could be the case that there might be an idea that's suggested that we just can't do. It's illegal or takes us out of compliance in some area where we've got to fulfill a requirement. And although it may sound like a good idea, we just can't do it. And there's no sense, you know, then belaboring that as a recommendation or a point going forward if it's something that just really can't see the light of day. But for the most of these recommendations, we'll do a review and maybe highlight some of the pros and cons on the ideas that have been sent forward. Then those would obviously be posted publicly. We have a website that we're using to kind of keep up with this work. And ultimately, then, all of these ideas from the 12 budget planning and review teams would be posted. People could look at those. We'll have, then, a couple of campus hearings. Now, these haven't been scheduled yet. They're going to fall anywhere from about March 7 through March 12. March 7, 8 would be a Thursday, Friday. And then if you go into the Monday or Tuesday the next week, we might have to push them back until then. But we'll have at least two hearings on campus where those recommendations from all of the teams have been made available publicly. People can read down through them. And the purpose of the hearings will simply be to take comment, take suggestions, ideas, what have you, from anyone who wants to come to one of the hearings and make a comment. We're also toying with maybe having some way to get that reported up just in an online statement as well if somebody can't come to a hearing. And then the board ultimately will do the first review of all of these recommendations when they meet March 14, 15. And they have to decide whether they want to do a special meeting the day before the regular board meeting to undertake this kind of first read as a board, or whether they want to build it into the regular work of their quarterly meeting on Friday, March 15th.
The other big news that we've been tracking and most of the university community has been tracking since about August is the state of your contract with the university.
Right.
You've been a finalist for two positions outside of Murray State University, and the reasons given for seeking those positions are, one, because the University Board of Regents has not taken action on your contract, and you will need to seek exceptional career opportunities as you see
fit. That's what I've stated publicly. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the situation changed a little bit at the December board meeting, where Board Chair Dino Curris announced that he will assemble Presidential Contract Review Committee, or in some other terminology associated with that, a three-member committee. Have you been kept apprised of the committee? Who are the members?
That's, at this point, about what I know. The chair has named himself, as well as two other members of the board, Regent Marilyn Buchanan and Regent Steve Williams. Both of them, of course, are gubernatorially appointed regents. I don't have any information at this point in terms of when they plan to meet or what that agenda will entail or the process they follow. You referenced board action at the December meeting, and that was via a resolution mm-hmm. that the board adopted. And
that was proposed by Mr. Williams as well, I believe.
That's right. Per the resolution that was adopted in December, that ad hoc contract review committee is supposed to then, report or somehow interface with the board at their March 15th meeting that I'd referenced. And then the full board will take that under advisement, seemingly with final action to be taken on May 10th. And I guess at this point, it's good to have a schedule out there. Up until then, it wasn't clear what the calendar would be for a decision, short of, I'd assumed that, some action would be taken pro or con by June 30th. So this maybe advances it a bit. But, my public statement still holds. Rhonda and I want to be here. I'm excited about, some big pieces of work that I'd like to see us get started on, but I can't be in a position where I assume that, I'm going to be extended. I'm going to be renewed. I would have anticipated that after a 360-degree full-scale comprehensive evaluation that was actually finished now about 9 months ago, that there would have been some thinking at that point as to how to move forward. And to this point, at least now we have the schedule, but no action. Until that takes place, I just can't sit and assume. But I do hope that they come to a decision soon and that decision is to extend, because I think there's a great deal more work to do and things we'd be excited to get started on.
Now, we understand that the meeting will be closed because it's in relation to a contract.
That's up to the committee. I mean, there is some legal basis that the committee is going to have to review to determine whether or not they have the ability to hold a closed meeting for this purpose. And that's not my consideration. That's for the committee working with the general counsel, the Fourth Estate, such as you news types, to follow the propriety of all that. But clearly, that committee is a public body under Kentucky Open Meetings Act. So what they do will have to be in the form of a publicly noticed meeting and all other requirements that would attach, for example, to the full board when they meet.
Well, I appreciate the candor. The next quick topic to talk about would be the Council on Post-Secondary Education had released a report just recently about college still paying.
Right.
And so the basically outlining the benefits of getting a bachelor's degree, the requirements for jobs now or jobs that require a bachelor's degree. What, in your opinion, prompted this report, and does it change anything?
Well, I'm not sure why the report kind of popped in out of the blue from the CPE. But you may recall, Chad, last fall, and in higher education circles, this got a little buzz. Last fall, Newsweek ran an article that asked whether college continued to pay. To some degree, maybe it was the case that the CPE and its president, Bob King, decided that now was a time to respond to that, or that there was a need to provide some press around that. So the CPE president had put forth an editorial that got picked up in a number of Kentucky papers. And the argument of the article by President King, his premise was that indeed college does still pay. And if you look at the data, there would be no question about this. To some degree, I think it's a little more nuanced view that needs to be taken. Now, as a university president, I still agree with the premise college pays. Uh-huh. But when you look at the article in Newsweek, when you read the CPE editorial, there's subtext, and again, there's more detailed information that you have to get into to really think about that. For instance, is it the case that you could go get a welding certificate, for instance, at one of our fine community and technical colleges here in Kentucky, and go out and get a great job with, for instance, Ingram Barge that may pay anywhere from $60,000 to $80,000? Absolutely. Now, you and I can debate whether going and getting that welding certificate is college or not, okay? Mm-hmm. If you want to call it college, and many do, then obviously it pays. And in fact, compared to a person who maybe went to a very expensive private liberal arts college in Kentucky, received a teaching certificate and will start work at only half of what that welder is making. Well, in that case, you know, it's not the case that it was maybe the greatest investment for the young teacher who went to, say, Center or Midway or somewhere like that to get a teaching degree compared to the welder. However, you have all kinds of things that come into play with this. What type of college was selected? What was the cost? What was the degree that was sought, and how does it tie in to workforce needs? Generally, yes, a college degree has earning power over the course of the career that for the average person equates to $1 million. As we've gone through this recession over the past now 4.5 years, it is absolutely clear that people with college training at some level, and this increases as you go up the ladder of higher education attainment, that those individuals are able to weather a recession well. 80% of the jobs lost during the recession were lost by people with high school degrees or less. In fact, if you look at people with college diplomas during that period of time, their job market actually grew in that period by something less than 200,000 jobs. So, you know, there's a lot more to this discussion than meets the eye. And to some degree, I think it may be driven by this push we've had in this country. Everybody has to have a baccalaureate degree, that this must be the standard that every student fulfills. And I don't subscribe to that at all. We have so many important jobs in trades work, in manufacturing, applied fields. There may be some need for post-secondary education training, but it does not demand a full-blown college degree, a baccalaureate degree. And to try to foist this on students across the board is, I think, just ill-informed. It's not always a good investment. It's harmful to students who may be acquiring thousands of dollars in loans for jobs they're not really interested in, all of that type of thing. For me, it comes down to really having good, strong career counseling through the high school years, having good access to knowledge about various types of post-secondary education settings, and then getting choices that link all of those things together and not have a situation where you have some student who gets forced to go, let's say, to a very expensive private college to study English, and upon coming out from that degree really knows in his heart he wanted to be a carpenter, which is good, worthy, and justifiable work. And it's those types of mistakes we gotta quit making with our students.
We'll have another segment with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn in the next hour of Sounds Good. We're back with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn. We meet monthly here on WKMS. You can hear this conversation in its entirety shortly after the program online at WKMS.org. Last year, universities came to the Kentucky State Legislature to ask for some funding or to be able to release some bonds for the universities to take on some debt to build or to renovate parts of their campus. Well, the legislature didn't accept that proposal last year, but it looks like they're going to move forward on that this year. And Murray State has in the neighborhood, if you add everything together, around $15 million in bonds that they'd like to sell for them to the university to do some work. Tell me about the process. Why wasn't it approved last year? What makes this year different? And what do you plan to do to the campus?
Well, last year, as you mentioned, Chad, there was an agency bond proposal that was part of the overall budget making process, and I just think in part it got caught up in so much other discussion, deliberation, debate about the Commonwealth budget that it just time ran out on the clock before a decision could get made and authority could be put into the 12-14 Commonwealth of Kentucky budget. So the governor this year at the start of the short session came back and said to legislative leadership, to the universities, that maybe it was time in this short session to think about picking that back up and allowing the universities for those projects where they were ready to move, where there wasn't going to be a lot of lag time, in getting these initiatives established and, shall we say, shovel ready, to mm-hmm. bring back an old term, that we could be allowed to move forward on those. Now, recall, agency bonds are bonds that each university sells itself. This is not a bond sold by Kentucky. We have to have the revenue for it. We have to go out into the bond market to get these bonds sold. We apply the revenue to pay off the bonds. And really, the only involvement per se from the state side is an intercept provision that, you know, would say if any institution defaulted on the bonds, the state would have to backstop those. Well, that's not happened. And in fact, if any institution was in danger of having that type of thing, we probably even could get the bond sold to start with. So each of us, at the urging of the governor, put together a small set of projects that we were ready to move on pretty quickly, that we had bonding capacity for. And as you've noted, most of these projects, in fact, all of these projects for agency bonds across the universities have to do typically with housing, dining, student fee-supported facilities, in the case of UK, athletics-supported facilities. That is to say, facilities are going to be paid for from athletics proceeds. So we were able to show that we have these projects ready to go, that we have a means to pay for those, that we're in a position to sell agency bonds to get that funding, and all that we needed was the authority of the General Assembly to do that. And we're going to see now about a proposal that is in the legislature for this spring to get that accomplished. I think, in part, without getting too much into the discussion here, we have had new legislative leadership in the Senate. I think that's just kind of caused a relook at some things. You've probably noted that there's some air of cooperation where everybody's kind of looking at what they have in common as opposed to what divides them. And all the parties have come together to say, let's run this agency bond bill. Let the universities use the money that they've identified to get some of the projects done, create jobs in the region, and get this thing moving. So that's what we hope to do. Now, for Murray State specifically, we have really kind of a small set of projects. One of the things that was determined was that we wanted to put forward, when I say we, the university presidents in deciding how to proceed on this opportunity, determined that we wanted to make sure we had projects that were ready to go, that we weren't going to be dithering to decide what to do and, you know, waste a lot of time having to get that all figured out. So our main project for our list of agency bond work is the renovation of Hester Hall. Many who are close to campus know that a year ago we finished a complete gutting, full-scale renovation of Elizabeth Hall. And next on the list for that same work would be Hester Hall, high-rise student residence on campus. That would be a pretty large chunk of that $15 million that we propose. We also have housing monies that we would use to put on some new roofs. We need to install new sprinkler systems. We've been trying to do work to rehab in a pretty substantial way our college courts, married student housing, graduate housing. So I do think it bodes well for us in looking at ways where we'll be able to work more closely with the General Assembly going forward.
On Monday, it's the annual presidential lecture.
That's right.
And that's been going on for, gosh, now 6 years or so.
Well, I've been here 6 years, yeah. and it's been every year since. And I think it may have predated me by a couple of years.
So it's been going
on. Yeah, we're getting, 8 or 9 years.
And this year, there were some heads turning at the selection of Spike Lee to be the lecturer. And that's Monday evening again at Lovett Auditorium. It's free to all.
That's right.
What inspired the selection of Spike Lee, an Academy Award nominated director?
Well, what we've been trying to do with the presidential lecture really almost since I've been here is to vary the selection of speakers to some degree, to be a little wider set of topics or wider venue. This year, I think there was an agreement that we wanted to try to focus more on diversity. I keep giving projects and pushing work with the commission I have here on campus for diversity and inclusion, kind of fill their plate with work. And we're looking to kind of keep that dialogue strong and vibrant on campus. So, and then in thinking about speakers who might come with a particular focus around diversity, and then matching up, you know, who was available on dates around the time we do the lecture, et cetera, at a cost we could afford, Spike Lee seemed to be the right choice for that. It's really going to be interesting to see what he does. I mean, some YouTubes of his college speeches are out there, and he cuts to the chase. I mean, he doesn't mince words, and it'll be a provocative speech, I have no doubt. But the idea of this isn't to have a tea party with the good China. The idea here is to have a speaker who will come in and kind of, you know, press people's thinking and force us all to take a look at other views or different perspectives. And around the issue of diversity, you know, he will absolutely do that. So I'm excited to get him here to see what he has to say to this audience. And the real driver for this year, beyond those logistical factors I talked about, just, you know, cost and availability and all of that, was someone who would really kind of, you know, push the envelope a little bit on our thinking about diversity.
You're also on a committee for the NCAA for FCS football, of which Right. Murray State is a member.
Absolutely.
I'm interested to know what the meeting was about and what were the outcomes.
Well, this actually started probably a good year and a half ago, where there was a group put together of presidents from FCF schools. These are the non-bowl football schools, although we are all Division I. And the idea at that time, as the NCAA convened us, was to look at ways to build the branding of SCS football, to enhance its visibility, to try to provide experiences for those Division I football student athletes that was a little richer for them, and highlighted, you know, what they're doing. And for the most part, it's led to us looking at how we build the tournament series, the championship series for those football schools. And that's held annually down in Frisco, Texas. And the idea is to look at how we can use the tournament structure there to build excitement, to get more viewers, to gain support on ESPN, for instance, and have something there. While I won't, you know, be so naive to say it competes with the bowl games, that at least gets on the radar for football fans as a Division I football experience, and for our student athletes, gives them the experience, at least at that championship game every January in Frisco, a bowl-type experience that takes place. So a lot of work's been done about branding, looking at the TV contract with ESPN, figuring out how to build the fan base during that tournament, et cetera. And I don't know where all that will go. A lot of work's been done for that purpose, and we want to continue to monitor that and support it.
Dr. Dunn, we're out of time this week.
I've enjoyed it as always.